Welcome back to the Bitter Jurors podcast. We're a queer Legend of Korra superfan podcast. My name is Sam Stanish. We're here today talking about book 4, chapter 12, Day of the Colossus, penultimate peril. Lemony Snicket did a lot for our age group's community, introducing us to the word penultimate at such an early era. I think what do the people who only listen to these Avatar episodes think about what Bitter Jurors even means? They never know. Anyway, obviously here with my beautiful, wondrous co-host, who I began on this journey with some 3.5 years ago, Derek Reining.
Hello, what's up? Yes, like a hummingbird machine, I'm fluttering in to discuss and chew away at your skin and just get all up in there, you know?
Thank you for attaching the plasma cannons to your arms before we started.
Yeah. Plasma song, you know, a completely new idea just introduced mere minutes ago into our world, but sure.
They're figuring a lot of stuff out in the Industrial Revolution of Legend of Korra. We have one of our all-star, superstar, regular guests here on the Vendors podcast, Avatar Universe subject, hilarious comedian Otto Fernandez.
Hey, thank you guys for having me back. You know, like, this is crazy because y'all been doing this for 3.5 years and you're finally like near the finish line. How does it feel?
For whatever reason, I feel like these finale episodes almost like don't carry the weight of like a true finale. So it's like it's not really hitting in the same way. I feel like the Avatar finale was like, this is it, four-parter, like, it's happening. Oh,
I feel like that has a lot to do with the fact that Nickelodeon pretty much said, fuck this show, after, like, season one. So they pretty much just did the best they could with what I guess they were allowed to do. I feel like in a perfect world, Legend of Korra could have also had, like, a four-part or three-four-part epic finale like The Last Airbender had, but this was a victory lap season in the first place. Like, everything after season one could be considered a victory lap season, except for season two, which fucking sucked. But season three was fucking awesome. And season four, I didn't think season four was going to happen, really. And then that came out, and it was like, yo, like, y'all really, okay, good. Like, do I think it's as good as season three of Korra? I don't think so. But again, victory lap. It just, it's nice. It's good, you know.
Yeah, we're having fun. The action is really good. The animation in this episode was amazing. Like, that building toppling moment was great.
Yeah.
Lots of fun stuff.
That was the ultimate story climax for me, when Lin, Sue, and Bolin,
they bended that building, dog. They were like, yo. At first, I thought it was just Bolin by himself. I'm like, wait, what the hell? I remembered that Lin and Sue were also helping, but that's still like, they brolic as hell. y'all ended a building.
I know, but it's like they really upped the ante, I think, in Korra in a lot of ways, and this felt like a fun sort of, like, you definitely can like imagine in the writer's room they were like, they definitely know the city's like fucked either way, so they might as well just like throw buildings at this thing at this point.
And I do appreciate the fact that it's like, you know, the first half of a finale, it's really like, it's not really too much going on. The plot is literally, hey, we're going to find a way to either destroy the robot, or no, we're actually going to find a way to get into the robot. Okay, cool. And there's not a lot of quick little, I appreciate the smaller scenes we get, or the quieter scenes, I would say. The Varric and Julie proposal, I'm like, came out of nowhere to me, kind of. I mean, her feelings for him didn't come out. That's been hinted at. But him just proposing to her, I'm like, oh, okay. I don't recall if there was like a, if he also shared feelings for her throughout their relationship on the show, but that was a nice little moment. I also like Sue's son when it's you talking, he's like, oh, I messed up,
I like the Varric and Julie stuff. I think that he came to appreciate her when she was no longer there, when they were separated earlier this season. And then, like, I feel like they were like hinting at this kind of thing starting like last episode, basically, and then now it's here.
Right. They were like, the writers were just like, man, we got to give like something besides just the final epic battle. We got to have like the character moments in there, you know?
Yeah, which I liked. I liked the Asami and her dad stuff. I think that really worked for me. I think him sacrificing himself, I mean, it worked. I don't know. He hasn't been much of a character.
He needed to be like involved in the story of the overall season more for this to really work for me.
Because then, like, it would have been also cool to have him, like, yeah, he loves being around his daughter again, but also he deadass could have been on some, like, you know, I'm not going back. And, like, he could have been, he just sort of dies.
Suicide Squad.
Of horror on the Sami's face. I'm like, zoom in on that. We need more of that. And then it immediately cuts back to the action, and Corey's like, oh shit, his plan worked. And then he just go, like, y'all don't care.
Cold.
Corey was like, oh,
that shit was brutal, man.
We did it. Yay. Literally. Oh my god. But yeah, the what else even is happening in this episode?
We get Pema, like Prince when Pema dealing with like the citizens of Republic City, like figuring out like how they're gonna do they just stay still, and then Prince Wu came through with the Badgers, and that was like, that was just like fun scenes to cut to take away from the main action, you know? Not take away from the main action, but like, there's other things going on besides just trying to deal with the robot situation.
Yeah. This came at the perfect time because I'm currently inundated with Naruto female character discourse.
Oh, God.
Good writing, bad writing, housewives. And, you know, Pema has been a stay at home mom and sort of just churning out children as fast as she can, and that's been like her goal in life. But I think that Pema is a really good example of someone who has like an internal life and like does stuff to help the storyline other than just being a stay-at-home mom.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I'm not saying just being a stay-at-home mom, but written to the side because of that fact, she has that as part of her character, and she's still a person.
Yeah. I will say something that I was reminded of watching this episode, and this is a thought I've never had while watching Legend of Korra Book 4 before, but Korra herself doesn't really have too much to do in this particular episode besides just being the leader, making sure that people are okay. So yeah, it makes sense. But watching this episode, I'm reminded of how her journey started this season. She's not in the first episode of Book 4, and she shows up at the end, and she's like in a fight club or something. And then I'm like, yo, they basically turned her into Ryan Atwood in the beginning of season 4 of the OC. And it's sort of like, I don't know how much in common Ryan's journey in that final season of the OC like matches with Korra's season in the final season, her journey in the final season of her own show. But it is a thing of like, huh, like, yeah, they both started off just down in the dumps, like for real, and slowly making their way back to the world they once knew, having changed as a person and shit. I don't know. It's just something I noticed watching this episode and being like, wow, she's really like, she came a long way, you know?
Season 1 also, you know, she comes from a destitute place and gets adopted into this magnificent house in a beach town. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on there. There's parallels.
It really is Ryan Atwood, though. I mean, it kind of makes sense.
And isn't the first episode called Welcome to Republic City or something? It's kind of Welcome to the OC, bitch.
Welcome to the OC, bitch. That episode is called The Premiere, I think, or Premiere. It would have been that pilot episode of the OC is perfect, but it would have been even more perfect if the episode was actually called Welcome to the OC, bitch. Like, that would have been fire. Exclamation.
Yes. I don't know that 2004 was ready for that.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, when they were getting out of the rubble is very the earthquake episode in the final season of the OC. So I'm picking up this sort of connection that's happening.
I have my conspiracy hat on for real. I'm taking off my Bud Light hat. I'm putting on my conspiracy hat. Yeah, the Legend of Korra and the OC both have 4 seasons.
That's true.
Tenzin is very Sandy Cohen.
Yeah.
It's actually. And they, you know, there's a core 4 in the OC as well.
That's true.
Bolin is very Seth Cohen.
Bolin is, oh man, I wish that Bolin was as funny as Seth Cohen. I feel like Bolin's humor a lot of the time edges on annoying more than actually funny. Like, I don't know how often y'all have seen the Bolin Sokka comparison, but Sokka is actually funny.
Yes.
Right? And Bolin is more so like trying to be funny, or the at least the writers are trying to make him like they think he's funny, but I doesn't always translate well for me, his humor.
Yeah, Sokka's like a comedian because he's got like the mind for it. Bolin is someone who's like maybe naturally funny in a conversation, but and at some point someone told him he was funny, and now he like overthinks it and tries to be comedic, but he'll just never be Sokka, you know?
Sokka yeah. could do Nuketuck, but Bolin could never do haikus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, Sokka couldn't do haikus either, but I know what you mean.
He right. did. He did for it most without of even it. Trying.
And with Bolin in particular, he was basically on like team fascism, you know, Kabira's yeah. team. So I forget exactly when he decided to break away from Kabira, but to see him in the action again. And again, it's hard to tell for me watching this because it's been a while, like years since I've seen the ending of the show. I've rewatched Korra like a couple of I've watched Korra like a couple of times, maybe two, three times all the way through. So rewatching this episode just out of the context of the rest of the show, I'm like, huh, it's kind of me trying to remember where everyone is at. But because everyone, for the most part, is just trying to stop this damn robot and stop Kavira, it's sort of like hard to figure out where everyone is currently at, like emotionally, you know?
Well, yeah. I think the emotional thing, I identified this while watching today. Kuvira does not have a strong enough emotional connection to any of the like actual protagonists of the show for her to like work overall for me. Like obviously the existential threat is there. She's like taking over the world. She is evil, but she hasn't like personally wronged Korra in any way. The closest thing we have to that is that her and Sue like have a relationship, but Sue is like a secondary to tertiary character. So it, you know, it just never really, you know, you don't connect, you don't, because like, why isn't why does Mako care about Kuvira? He doesn't. But bro, if you go Mako back to like,
he did nothing this episode. He was just there.
Yeah, I know. Mako, Asami, and Bolin don't exist this season.
He just said a couple of lines in the beginning, and then that was it for Mako. He was just no dialogue or anything else going on with him. Like, I have no idea. Like,
but like every character, like aside from Toph, has their life radically altered by the Fire Nation in Avatar. So it's like, okay, yeah, that makes sense that they like are fighting. But what's Kuvira? Like, nobody cares about Kuvira. That Bolin was fighting with her and then betrayed her because like Opal told him to, kind of. I don't know. And then it's Korra's job as the Avatar to do this, but we aren't given a reason why she like really cares.
Right.
Yeah. It's a paycheck thing for her, you know. It's like, I have to do this as the Avatar. Yeah, I agree with that. And it was kind of funny. My favorite line, I think, from this episode was when Sue was like having the debrief with her like injured son, and she just describes Kavira, I think, as complicated. Is the word? Yeah. I was like, oh.
He's like, why would she knew I was here with y'all? Why would she like aim and like fire at us when she knew I was here? And then she said that line, and I'm like, yeah, dog. Like, maybe they could have gone further into like, oh, maybe it could have worked more her character if it was like got even more into like why fascism is the way it is and why certain people become that or use that to further their own ends. You know, we never really find out what else she wants besides just take over everything. We don't really like, find anything deeper than that or something more like personal.
Sue would have been that character who could have delivered that to us as like her former boss, and I like they kind of imply they were close at some point. Like, this would have been a great opportunity for Sue to be like, yeah, like this is like you said, like explain maybe Kuvira's past that would inform her decision making now. It just feels like, again, could have used like two or three more episodes a season.
Sure.
Pitar, in Pitar, it gets off too easily too. Like, he was evil. Like, what should have been the reveal in that episode is that he's waking up and he regrets what he's done, but he's still handcuffed to the bed. Like, they should be like, we're still worried about you.
Yeah. It's like, oh, she tried to kill you once. I feel like this is not the first time Kuvira has tried to kill Batar. She probably has been like, oh, sorry, like misfire. I didn't mean to. Like, I feel like, I don't know. This is just a weird thread to track. And it's weird that they're like keeping it going, like the Batar Kuvira relationship. It's just, it doesn't really work for me at any point.
Yeah, I did really enjoy the Prince Wu stuff. He really finally stepped up. You know what I mean? I guess being with Mako is somehow, you know, not somehow, like, you know, Mako's a weird character because he also doesn't really ever take off as a character, I would say. I feel like after season one, it's sort of like I actually think he's a pretty funny character when the show allows him to be.
Yes.
He's sort of like the angel to Korra's Buffy, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I feel like once Mako gets his dorkier moments as the series goes on, that's when his character, I think, like clicks, but he's not allowed to fully become like the goofy, like dorky kind of character that he like, where in my opinion, his best moments are when he gets like, when he's like the straight man and like being made, responding to like the weird shit happening around him and him being like, ah, and like having like a dorky kind of response to stuff. But
I agree.
So I do recall enjoying the Mako and Wu stuff in general, but they're not together at all in this episode because they got separated. So
yeah, Wu does name check Mako. I feel like Mako has a lot of second person visibility in this episode in that regard. But yeah, I think like you said, Mako is kind of he's almost like a catalyst for change for other characters because he's like so awful in relationships with them that they like change. It makes them realize some stuff about themselves that need to change. And they just kind of leave Mako in the dust to keep being like you said, like a straight man who's also dorky and also should never be in a relationship with a woman in the future.
Limited thoughts on Mako in this episode.
He's such a non-factor. I'm just saying my thoughts about him in general, because this episode really doesn't have too much character stuff going on. I do like that Milo's the one who came up with the pain idea.
Yes.
I did like the Milo is pro-looting. I support that. And I like that. I really thought there's a point in this episode where Milo like dives to save Tenzin and he's like trying to slow him down. And it looks for a second like he's gonna like fart to stop the fall.
I thought the exact same thing.
And I was like, this is growth that he used his legs instead of farting. They didn't really stay on that for too long, but I was very proud of him.
Okay, so people die in The Last Airbender and in Legend of Korra, but this one we definitely have like a confirmed two or maybe three deaths with the badger moles crushing the guys in the mecha suits.
Yeah, they're gone.
They're dead for sure. We don't see blood, obviously, but I'm like, y'all killed them. Y'all killed them, dog.
It's like earlier in the season, Bolin melted a bunch of people in the mech suits with lava, and they like supposedly got out, but they would have burned up like pretty immediately, I feel like.
I remember even in like the Avatar finale where like people are getting blown up, but you see them like in the background with like the parachutes.
Of course. But yeah, here it's like a badger mole is probably equal to like two elephants probably in weight. So that just like coming down on a tin can, like they're done.
They're done. Yeah.
And like this is like, how did no one get hit by any of these gigantic spirit laser blasts?
Yeah.
They leveled buildings. They like, she aimed directly at them numerous times. It's like, you can kill off a couple airbenders. It's going to be okay.
They were getting hit, but not directly. Like Tenzin got knocked out. One of the kids got knocked out. Like, that's why Milo had to save him. Cause I'm watching them all fall and I'm looking, I'm like, oh, Tenzin's knocked out. He's not moving. So I feel like they got hit, but if it got like directly blasted, yeah, they'd be done for real.
Maybe it could have been a thing if they needed to avoid saying they died. Like the spirit laser could have like immediately transplanted them to the spirit realm or whatever. Like it is automatically get like shunted as opposed to just dying, I guess.
Right.
But it's just, how did no one die until Mr. Sato died?
Right. It's like something, even though it is kind of like silly that the ways we have these shows, like, you know, shows for kids, right, have to like work around the D word, dying, death, right? Mm-hmm. But what's understood doesn't have to be explained all the time. Like when Asami's dad died, it was like, oh yeah, we know what happened there. But then to immediately go from seeing Asami to then just Korra saying, ah, oh, his plan worked, like, especially that this man sacrificed himself for the
that
team,
was not
like,
right?
And the way the like crumpled like hummingbird mech like just like sadly like falls after, I like, it was kind of funny.
It is like, kind of funny, unintentionally like so, but still, I was like, damn, yeah, that was like, that was rough, man.
Yeah,
we needed another Asami reaction shot after he died. Like we saw her like getting flung out of the thing, but as soon, like he died, Korra was like, let's go.
Why are they showing her so far away? Like, yeah, like, I guess to show her whole body, how her body's reacting, but it's like, still, like, nah, we need more. We needed more after. Do we even see Asami after? No, no, we don't see Asami after.
The episode ends
that moment. Yeah, the episode ends once they get inside the robot. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, this was kind of a submersible moment, you know, like, rich billionaire gets sort of imploded in a, like, shoddily created, like, device. So I understand Korra's sort of flippancy here. I relate it.
Not Penny's boat. Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, well, he was kind of awful anyway, so I guess that's done.
Yeah. Okay, like, but all we have about him, and I didn't even recognize him when he came on screen, but we had the scene where he and Asami played Paisho in prison in like episode 3, and now this.
I know. Yeah. I mean, he's in his Silver Fox era with like the full
and like red point. Eyes. He looked good.
Yeah.
Could have had him on screen a little more.
Yeah. Past tense looked. He was a handsome man before he went getting smashed. Like, I just can't get over that. Like, the main scary thing in this episode is she's going to squash us like a bug. Like, I just, like, that idea is really funny.
Yeah. There could have been like missiles on the mech or something.
Something a little more frightening, I guess. But I mean, this was a cool idea for like you said, it's like they tried like tripping the mech and that didn't work. So like now we have to like physically get into it. Felt very like video gamey in a lot of ways. Like, okay, now we have to go into the final dungeon to beat the boss.
Well, yeah, this episode and the next one definitely have like video game mission vibes, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like that a lot just speaks to how Korra is more of a, like, an action, capital A action show than Avatar was. Obviously, Avatar, they had the fight scene every episode, but I feel like Korra, it's much more like, most of the dialogue is like, okay, we are going to do X so we can do Y, and then we will go to Z. Like, it's all very, like, we're planning something and we're executing the plan. But I feel like that is just the nature of the beast for Korra, because they have upped the ante to the point of giant robots invading a city.
Yeah, and I do still like this setup way more than the season 2 like giant kaiju like spirit fight. That was just, what the hell was that, man? That was,
yeah, no one like ever really like addressed how like horrifying that would be as just like a Republic City person who's like out in the bay watch, like, oh, like, it's, we're watching the sunset, and then suddenly like two like massive like glowing human bodies just appear in the bay and start punching each other. No right. one really reacts to that information.
That's because, like, Republic City is empty. Nobody lives there. We never see citizens. And
nah, in season 1, they tried. They tried to sort of show, like, all right, here's the benders, here's how the non-benders feel about the benders. They tried, you know, showing, like, what actual, like, regular people in this world are like in season 1 of Korra.
I agree with that. In season, but this finale.
Book one of Korra.
We're seeing this entire city get obliterated, and it just feels like I should care. It feels like, since they've been living in this place for so long, it's been the setting of like so many of the seasons, it should be like an additional character of the show, but it just feels hollow. I would care so much more if whatever Sue's city was called, it got destroyed. If Zhaofu got destroyed, I'd be like, damn, that place ruled. I loved all of the Zhaofu episodes. Republic City's getting blown up. The characters themselves are destroying the buildings. So I'm like,
yeah,
that makes.
Well, we're literally watching.
I guess I gotta go.
We're literally watching 9/11 go down in Republic City, and then it's just like, you know,
I know. Again, it's like, imagine.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I mean, imagine Ryan Atwood earthbending the pool house at a giant robot. Yes. That would be more emotional.
It would be entirely.
Like, this is like related to what we're talking about right now, but in John Wick Chapter 2, have y'all seen that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sam, have you seen John Wick Chapter 2?
No.
Right, so slight spoiler for John Wick Chapter 2, but when his house gets blown up, I was mad emotional over that because of what we know about John and what the memories he and his wife built in that home, you know what I mean? And, you know, the dog that she got him and everything from the first movie leading up to everything we find out in the first movie. And now this happens, like your wife is gone and now your dog is gone and now your home is gone. Like, bro, like, I was like, yo, I was heated. on his behalf. The same thing is happening in Republic City, and I'm like, yeah, man.
Robot. For this to work, they need it. Like, the only landmarks I can think of off the top of my head in Republic City are the Korra statue and the Aang statue. And so I feel like for this to have, like, hit, the Earthbenders needed to, like, instead of just a building, they needed to take half of the Aang statue and, like, fling it at the robot. Well, that would be, like, self-sacrificing.
Yeah, I was going to say they should have put, like, the, like, we should be in the bay and, like, we're near the pro-bending arena. Like, that's where Bolin and Mako used to live. Like, that was a pretty big focal point of the show. Like, maybe they should, like, slice off that, like, dome and throw it at her. Like,
that's on the water, too, so Korra could have still done the freezing thing.
Oh, yes. That would have been that would have been so much better actually showing locations from like the past that we've seen a bunch of times and then just seeing everything get destroyed, you know? Like,
yeah. I did love that shot of the laser going off over Korra's head, and it was very Gundam, like the like line of explosions in the background behind her. That was really cool. And I think, you know, if you're coming up with this sort of like urban fantasy setting, it's like imply that there will be like some sort of like city-based battle at some point. So I get like why they want to be flinging buildings, but like you said, they could be important buildings that we know about. But just, you know, we have thoughts. It's okay.
We do have thoughts. what was I gonna say?
I feel like what else do we need to have we not discussed yet? We brought up Wu.
His singing, I feel like I learned where I feel like I sing like that all the time, and so I feel like I learned where that comes from.
It was very funny when the Earth Empire and the people in the mecha suits came in and said, "Hey, you're coming with us, and please stop that singing." That one guy did not like his singing. That was hilarious.
That was it was very classic Avatar to have this sort of like moment of that is like distressing, but also we can have a little fun. We'll have some jokes in there. And I feel like you said, Pemo and Wu was a great, like, unexpected combo that really worked for me. I love that.
They've had more time together than Team Avatar this season.
Literally. They're the new Team Avatar, those two. I can see it happening.
I'm going to say this, man. This is something that Korra sort of lacked that Last Airbender had, is that the Team Avatar from, you know, Aang's Team Avatar, they definitely felt more like a gang, the Aang gang. They were actually full like homies for real. Mm-hmm. And in Korra, it's sort of like it's just four people who are together at times. And you very rarely got to feel the sense that they actually like were like tight knit like that. Yeah. In my opinion.
And I think a lot of that is just like a result of the structure of the show. Like obviously if you're traveling the world with someone, you're gonna bond with them more than if you all just like live in the same neighborhood kind of and you're also like teenagers, but it just makes it harder to connect with them, which is why I was like today I was thinking about like what's next for Avatar, and like I would be totally fine with them like skipping ahead a few cycles and like we just like don't even need to worry about seeing like legacy characters come back, because I feel like in Korra they didn't really lay the groundwork for me to be like, yes, Bolin is here, old Bolin. Like
that's so true. That's so funny. I don't care about any of them.
I mean, Korra does become great eventually. Like season three is phenomenal,
which and then
four is solid. Book four is solid, but book three of Korra was freaking like blew me away. That shit was phenomenal stuff.
It's so good, and I mean, Korra would be the one that I would like want to see again, and she could be a past life that shows up in the like. I feel like that would be easy. Yeah,
and she's the only one, and so she is like. Maybe she's like learning how to be a mentor too, because she doesn't have the guidance of the like previous ones to like guide her
on being like a spirit guider. Yes. That would be perfect. Yeah. So you're welcome, everyone involved in the Avatar creative team, for just giving you a great idea.
Yeah. I'm not sure if it's confirmed, but I'm pretty sure that the next show is just the next Earth Avatar, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like we get like some like unofficial fan account on Twitter is like always breaking new Avatar news. I'm like, is this real?
No, I feel like the creators of Last Airbender and Korra are going to do another show set in that universe.
They are. They've got a bunch of stuff in the works.
And then there's the live action Netflix one coming out, which I have no idea. Just based on the castings I've seen so far, I'm like, eh.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Definitely on a better, it's on a better track than the movie for sure. But I don't know. I'm seeing all the One Piece live action stuff. I'm like, who wanted this? Like, I think if you love One Piece, you're cool with just having One Piece as it is. Maybe I'm speaking out of place in that way, but I'm just like, why would anyone want that? I don't know.
I've never seen the One Piece anime, but based on like people I follow on Twitter and like a couple of reactions, they seem to be enjoying it. So
yeah, I'm like, okay, I guess. But then I think about the Cowboy Bebop reaction, and it's like, I don't. It just seems like such like an unnecessary risk to take on Netflix's part to do these live action things. I don't know.
Especially when anime is specifically made so that like the point is that it's not live action, because the shit that happens in the anime is impossible to happen in live action. So to do a live action adaptation of an anime, you're sort of already shooting yourself in the foot from the very beginning, because it's like it's not going to be as good, because you're not going to be able to do some of the things that the anime could do in abundance. You know, you're going to have to like limit yourself already by doing a live action version of what already, you know, succeeded.
Exactly. It's just a weird decision, but I don't know, maybe it'll be good. I don't want to like instantly write it off, but I'm more excited for more animated stuff in the Avatar world.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I feel like the difference is we're now at a point where like One Piece started being written in like the late 90s or early whatever, and so I mean CGI whatever is like at a point where it could be more. I've only seen the first like several episodes of it, One Piece, and never watched the live action one, but I agree with Otto that I feel like most people I know who like One Piece think the show or movie, whatever it is good.
Okay. I say I'm glad for them. I feel like as a Cowboy Bebop person, I was like, why are we doing this? But I'm glad at least they made a good one this time.
Yeah, I've seen Cowboy Bebop, the show. Well, not the Netflix one, the OG anime. And I've seen the Cowboy Bebop movie. So I never once checked out the Netflix Cowboy Bebop, just because I'm like, this is not for me, because I've already seen Bebop. I don't need to see the nerfed version of it.
I don't want to see a lesser version of the thing I love, which is like my feeling on the live action Avatar show. But again, I would be happy to be proved wrong, and it's good.
I don't think it will be good, but I will be watching.
I feel like any other thoughts on this? Like you said, penultimate episode. It's kind of weird to think that it's almost done. It would be great if we got more news of future projects. I feel like it's getting dripped very slowly, but
like, again, like the fact that Nickelodeon, for whatever reason, just did not rock with Legend of Korra. Like after season one, it was supposed to be a miniseries. It was supposed to be like, this is it. This is like more Avatar stuff, but we're not doing anymore. And then they kept getting renewed and kept getting treated shitty. So the fact that we got season four at all, and it was a book four, and it was like solid throughout, but yeah, they did that, the clip show episode, like that was like that was so the budget was just, they were like, we know what this is, we giving you a clip show episode of an animated like show, like come on, like we really we're fighting for our fucking lives right now, audience. Like,
yeah, the Korra feels like one of those things that we're gonna like, someone's gonna make a YouTube, I'm sure someone already has a sort of like, what are those called? It starts with RE, like
retrospective.
Yeah, retrospective. Thank you. Like, so that's, this feels like designed for that. In like 2 or 3 years, someone's gonna do a Korra retrospective and like look at how messy things were on the like exec studio side, the fan reaction. Won't be me. I won't be doing that. But
Sounds like something. There's this YouTuber named Quentin Reviews who did an 8-hour iCarly video and like a 6 to 8 hour Victorious video. And he also did like a Sam and Cat video. I watched both the iCarly and the Victorious videos. It took me a week to get through like every minute of those videos. But that seems like something he would do, like going through like the behind the scenes like of Avatar and like maybe the behind the scenes of Korra as well, you know?
I just feel like every child's cartoon that adults get into has these things that like the story, like the stories of the network hating the show or whatever. I don't know. I feel like every show, or it's always like Steven Universe was totally screwed over by Cartoon Network kind of thing.
Yeah. But it's like, yeah.
Meanwhile, it ran like for over 100 episodes.
I know. It's like, but it's like they did like release it weirdly. I don't know. It's like, I feel like it's like no one involved is actually as like conniving or as like cunning about it as like we imagined in our brains. It probably just was like people sending emails all day, every day, and like just no one giving a fuck on one end. Right. And then, so it's like, oh, I just would be so curious to like be a fly on the wall for like those moments of like, I guess we're renewing Korra again, even though we seem to think it's like not profitable for us.
Dog, I remember watching Korra at the time when it originally was airing and having to go on nick.com on the shitty video player.
That was sometimes horrible. I have
to like refresh the page and I'm like, bro, like what's going on, man? Like
literally
treat this show with more respect, you know?
And that was like not even, it was like not even pre-Netflix. Like we had figured out like video streaming at that point when like this was airing. And I still, like you said, remember the video player being so horrible. It was bad.
Yeah.
It was, but I distinctly remember waking up past midnight when these episodes dropped on that website and watching them instantly.
Yes. What a time. But yeah, that's
last
that's
thing our, that I re- yeah. I remembered what I wanted to talk about. I just rewatched Ocean's 11 earlier this week, and Varric did the pinch in this episode. He did the electromagnetic pulse, just like we learned about in Ocean's 11, to take out the city of Las Vegas.
Wow. I mean, yeah, so is it correct that it's, I guess the explanation was that it's running on spirit energy is why the EMP didn't work. Which again, I'm surprised no one's questioning like how is it just like infinitely like producing energy? I would be like, wait, can we like use this for like good things? Like just like infinite electricity for the rest of our lives? Like,
well, maybe that's where we'll go in the Earth Avatar series. Even though it seems like the spirits really hate that, but they kind of hate that it's being used for war.
But not enough to like do something about it.
No, they don't get involved in human wars, even when spirit energy is being used in human wars.
They are very like people in that way, I would say. Like they care, but like not enough to like intervene.
The spirit world is basically Switzerland. They're like, yeah, we staying out of it, man.
Like we're good. We'll come. I mean, honestly, like I don't blame them. Like they seem to like not. They don't need people to be there to like shack up, like they just have vines, so they'll be good whether humans are there or not.
They're like, enjoy your 9/11, we over here, we gonna do our own thing,
we're fine. Like we're fine. And like Korra just like increased their real estate by like twice, like doubled it, so like they're good, they don't need to involve themselves in anything. Yeah, so those are my final thoughts. I'm excited for the finale, which I forget is, what's the title? Do I remember?
The Last Stand.
Yes, which I'm like, again, I mean, Avatar Aang was like the perfect final episode title for Avatar. And I would think, I will always be salty that the finale's not called Avatar Korra, but I kind of get it. It's not really about her like becoming the Avatar.
It's not about you.
It's not always about you all the time. Yeah.
I, you know, Bolin at the beginning of this episode was like, why don't we just let her take over? And
like you were trying to do that earlier, Bolin. Of course you're gonna say
he's
that.
Fake as hell. He's a mole. He's trying to just, he's still working for Gubera. That's my conspiracy theory. Yeah. But that was my final thought.
Yeah, he's like, guys, what if we just let her win? Like, wouldn't that be weird?
and Julie and Varric are like, good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. Y'all really about to do the thing one last time. That's crazy.
I know. It's going to be fun. I'm excited. I don't know where we're going. I don't know if we've officially nailed down what we're doing next, but I guess we'll find out when we get there.
Slay. Otto, thanks for being here. Do you have anything you want to plug?
Nah, man, I'm just, you know, I'm happy I've got to talk about Legend of Korra, you know, one last time. You know what I mean? If y'all ever do a Better Call Saul podcast, I'm down for any episode, anytime.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Well, I know Derek's thoughts on Breaking Bad, so, you know, we'll see.
I'm down to be convinced otherwise. I was like 20 when I watched it, and now I'm about to be 30 in less than 24 hours. So maybe.
Oh, happy maybe early birthday, dude.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. I meant to start this episode by singing a birthday song, and then. So I'm glad that this came back up because on the day this drops, it'll be Derek's birthday.
I will. Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday to me, Beyonce, and Adrian Maloof from and the Housewives of Beverly Hills. And
my mom's birthday is tomorrow. Yeah.
Wow.
Legends only, literally. And a Survivor winner that I won't mention because he's awful. The
Who?
Gabler. I feel like we talked about before.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I was like trying not to be shady, but you know.
If anybody looked it up, I think it would still be shade.
It is shade. Sorry.
Oh, well.
But yeah. Thank you so much, Otto. Sam, do you want to plug stuff?
Ooh, baby. Follow my other podcast, Buffy Boyfriends. We just recorded season 3, episodes 1 and 2 yesterday. So we're making good time.
Yes. Hopefully I can be back on soon. I loved my episode I recorded with you guys.
Yes. Christine and I have plans for when you will return.
Okay, good.
So wait, I've seen Buffy. I have thoughts on Buffy too. If you ever want to have me on that, shit.
You've been on the podcast.
Well, have me on again. That's what I'm saying. Like, come on, man.
We will.
You can follow me at follow me at Ring Derek's. Follow us at Bitter Jurors Pod on Twitter and Instagram. Follow Shadow Play Gays. Christine and I have a new episode that will be out 2 days. Will be on Wednesday. So that's when we're planning to drop our little Sailor Moon mini exploration that we did. Exploring the much talked about relationship of Sailor Uranus and Sailor Neptune. That was a really fun episode to do. Definitely not the last Shadow Play Gays thing that we will do. Hopefully it won't take over a year like it did for this one to drop.
You guys should talk about Paige and Alex on Degrassi next.
Yeah, that's a good idea. We're just going to like slowly move away from anime lesbians to lesbians in all sorts of media.
I support that. Yes. Amazing. Well, okay, well, we'll see you next week for the last episode of Legend of Korra.
Yes. Bye.
Bye.
Peace.